using it right now simultaneously with the polygraph, so that isn't an issue since I already strapped in. And
so that's okay.
I basically, you would also need to explain on what the boxes that you put up will show when the doesn't believe the testicle, which when he referred to this, that part of the whole process is that you're really testing the reactor and what is not to get up to the testicle.
Well, but even if you knew you were being tested but didn't have things attached to your fingers and a cup on, you might respond differently too much.
Or if you couldn't see the sensor, but then it won't. There is something on the body that reflects that laser, so they know that it is dead.
In this case, no.
It's also the case that they can detect muscle sound, which is an analog of the tremor.
That's fine. All three of our bodies are vibrating in sense.
Right.
The laser itself, I think, the technology that comes from the Boeing College. Target application. They might track object moving that's caused from the because of that vibration signature that was given up. So one thing that was given up the code state is also from the smoke. Again, what we're trying to do now is a lot of moving stories. There are things out there that the industry does, the community has developed, where they were creating more resources. What happens when the subject doesn't know what that is? What happens when there's no pressure from the top? You don't know yet. That's if we add a sensor, can we add one more sensor to what we have and increase the accuracy by half percent?
Relevant questions. They're going to show greater arousal than people who are actually involved.
Well, one thing changed was
quality control report for Albuquerque, and in the process, sort of did the whole process from beginning to end as a manager. There, we reviewed some charts. We had a fairly detailed discussion about the structure of the exam and a variety of the chart scoring system. And then we had people who went through the acquaintance component of the exam. Virtually everybody did that between the 2 days. We reviewed in an effort to computerize the information that's being extracted from the process and make some input to that. And each of the committee members queried at least one examiner in depth. To John Cassioppo, the last time I had seen him was on television, because the rest of us went upstairs, and about an hour later, he was still querying the camera. I was picking up my bag to go to the airport. So different people worked at different levels. There were a subset that simultaneously reviewed a series of charts from actual examinations. And I believe that the second day of the meeting did similar things, but in an over with the new group. And so I can't speak to the second day.
Well, the people who
would
not have been there the first day have the same briefings that we had had the first day. And those of us who had already been there and done that actually went and off and read the examiner's manuals and the whole description.
Sometimes sources. So in terms of a data source to tell us about polygraph independent of all those sources of information, it isn't that. It couldn't be that. I might argue that it should be that. You have a different purpose, but I think we have to remember that it's and it isn't systematic. It doesn't appear that we always have that information. Is what it seems to be relevant. Or even my question was, sometimes you get it just because of what happens then that made it possible for the examiner to know those things ahead of time, or not know them. So in that sense, it's not. That certainly hasn't got the examiner out of the room. You certainly haven't got the examiner out. Examiners will always know the same kind of information about the person anyway. Again, I would agree with this in terms of how we should regard and find it.
I would expand on that. At least my impression, I think that's all the question was, that the examination procedure that people were introduced to was quite different than the examination procedures in the population study. But the examination procedure, in fact, all the ones I read about, it purports to evaluate polygraphs. And what we saw was a much more nuanced sequential and possibly even a serial procedure rather than sort of a one-shot check procedure, which typically is what you evaluate. We're reading about one-shot check procedures of specific items, but apparently implementation vary from that, and in fact there may be multi-shots and multiple items incorporated in a manner that is roughly standardized, but that's still greatly under the control of the agent for the person.
I just add a word or two to that. When we heard David explain how the exam was given, I'd say that the exam that was given to me really differed in some number of ways. I don't know how important those were. But they were generally different themselves, but there are a lot of specific differences. The problem were how this particular exam over time comes to feel comfortable. Those will all be monitored continually also again. So presumably the variations are known and not considered important. From a research point of view, I would consider them very important.
Yeah, they're not clearly reflected in the simulation study.
But they're reflected, they're just not measured. So they're there, as we'll talk about. There are multiple examiners, but no information about that ties into everything else in the study.
I guess I would like to add, this isn't a disagreement, however, for those of us who are both places, the CES exam we watched during training was very with what we were told was a TDS examination procedure in Albuquerque, and what we did in fact go through the quality control process on the charts, which are automatically recorded by the web, the questions were asked. That indicated to me that they were nearly identical from what was being trained at that time to what was being implemented. Now, when we took the test ourselves, we only went through the acquaintance process. We didn't go through the Part A and the Part B, because apparently that can't happen. It's not allowable unless somebody wrote the test on it. So whatever deviation we saw from what we expected in the acquaintance part of the test may or may not be generalized more to the critical part of the test. Now, I don't know if I'm catching you. We're completing things.
I'm not catching quite what I referred to. I wasn't actually referring primarily to the acquaintance test or in charge of Part A or Part B. What I was referring to primarily was the sequential nature of the way it was developed when people have difficulty with the initial questions in Part A or Part B. That's reflected in the charge of the exam. series of briefings, of debriefings, perhaps re-examinations, perhaps switching to another format of the test, until at some point either a decision is reached that the source of the problem has been identified, and then the charts are labeled NDI and then disposed of, or perhaps they come up against a blank wall and say, well, we've done everything we can, and everything we can is a lot more than initial chart A and chart B. We can't resolve it. We're going to go upstairs. And so there's a rather complex process that goes on beyond, that is not well documented, but is very nuanced, that intuitively makes a great deal of sense, but isn't reflected in these evaluation cycles.
Andy, am I right that in the description you gave us about the ongoing study, that you've attempted to address some of that?
Yeah, I think if you look at, I think there's a limited number of the comments on those studies, where you're attempting to look at the screening process, and the control for those things is to go back to the sort of vulnerability study. What was the most important thing to kind of control for the age, and the research came along? What changed? I think that as we've gone back now and looked at those studies, we're trying to explain that all of this huge range of variance. Some of this is surface contamination, some of it is poor methodology, some of the training on how the program practices are actually in a learning process about CDS. Is it important to do it in this way or that way? This whole issue of examiner bias, whether or not I have one examiner or a whole cadre, I have laboratory people from the university, is all these things have to be measured at some point, given that we've got the study, all of these controls. What we did this year, and this is going to, at least the protocol is going to be able to be very simple. If we go back and look at it, I run two pilot studies in the country. What can we control for? What can we do from eliminating much of the variance? And how close can we simulate? It's very difficult to find and design a methodology to truly simulate the field. What happens when we get a protocol early, and then how do we draw that? And then we also have to try and answer all the scientific questions. And we generally, in the past, it appears to me we're very intuitive about the program for base recognition. There was a part of our project we had the whole close to us. It was the base rate. There was only two people alive by the base rate all the way through this process. Because we were afraid it would leak out. And the examiners in past studies had a tendency to recognize very quickly half of them would be open, half of them were not. When we tried to switch that and go to a closer than normal base rate of 20%, 30%. They pick up on that too. How do they do it? Because you don't break out on the ones that come out of that song. So this time we tried to make it from those saying, right, we're going to do some testing.
You clarify, please, don't break out.
We don't go to the extended examination. If the subjects that are coming to the examiner, let's put this up in the examiner's real world, I'm going to see two or three subjects per day. I'm going to be here for 5 weeks. After about a week, they're starting to notice patterns. Okay, when I see a subject, and after I get through the test video, I'm kind of gone. I don't see any more of that. And I'm going to probably, at least, yeah, that person is supposed to do something. All of it is completely. So, some of the issues are kind of that. And so, we just need to have examiners by kind of that. No matter what the problem is, which violates our own teaching, we have to do this with our examiners as a follower. This is complex in itself. So, once you understand test A and test B, actually have two four areas, two components of issues, which one do you break out on if they both came out in SI? We're sort of presuming we got a false negative. And it's just a subjective call at that point between the two symbols and again, which area do we know break out of the secondary.
between the studies, the program is one of a variety of things. For instance, one subject might be programmed to the estrogen. Then they're administered to the PCS exam, and lo and behold, they don't hit on the estrogen. But they hit on dysphagia. You get an operational definition problem. Now, they're really understanding the difference between two, and in our little world, this bleed over is it important for us? Why does everybody get on R3 as opposed to estrogen? And so, when we report low accuracy, sometimes it's because it's programmed for one thing, and we actually got to get on something else, and there's that player to say that that's the natural cause. This time, we programmed every subject, we did every time. They commit estrogen, they could have found this fucking one day. Well, it did do, based on our debriefings, and all of these are video tests, I think it did a significant job of raising depth. A lot of these subjects really bought into it. We were getting responsible. The first time, I think, we were able to say, our subjects are actually programmed to allow us to keep in contact. Showing up. Some of the anecdotes from our radio missions about people agree. The church out there is getting response. All those psychologists have felt guilty for that. This is all a critical thing to do. We raised your payoff. But again, as you all know, you have to pay the interest of the same. So you're never going to have an unequal jeopardy. So you want to pay the maximum for the person who can beat you. But you're not allowed to. We think that we've answered a lot of those methodological problems with this current study. The results are now being just sanitized. We want to make sure the data that's there is cleaned up, that we have to have an extra view if the subject did something that violated the protocol. And that's what we're doing. Protocol is one of the things that the committee is deciding on us to do in the visit, and that's how I think we approach the community. The results are still going to happen. And we hope that we're going to do at least more definitive. That's about as far as I can do. We don't know it yet.
So this may be a good time to swing back to John.
Patricia and I reviewed our 8-10 study on speed. I'll just give you my walking up there. I'll just give you my real background. I just thought I'd give you kind of a bracket. One of the first studies was Fallen in 1981. We did a direct to lock and close test with a 20-degree chart team comparing the zone method scoring, data control method, and the development method. There were about 56 individuals, most of which are civilians who work for the Army. They lied about half lied, and they lied about a piece of biographical information, which piece was determined by a roll of the dice. And in this study, a number of results were the same. One was the graded control method in interpreting the charts was not better than chance. The irrelevant was one of the ones that was better than chance, and that particular procedure came third. So they had already gone through the zone and the control question technology. So it was unclear really what the irrelevant would have been better than candidate and counterbalance in the study. The zone method is what's typically used, so focusing on that in the moment. There were 62% correct classifications of innocent, 7% guilty. They noted here that more individuals failed the attention test, or it required more than one chart. And a team in the field, which suggests, this is early, this is 20 years ago, that motivation was important. And partly from this study that became a concern when they broke it down in terms of individuals who required one chart or more than one chart on the acquaintance test, there was greater error on those who required more than one chart. However, even those who required one chart, performance wasn't really good, the disclosure percent error is actually as well. But Patricia will do it to kind of sum up statistically the results of crop on.
Okay. Yeah, so what we have are a series of simulations, lab analog studies of screening exams. And I happen to order from the timeline. First is the one that John has just described you. For each study, I'm getting the simple percent correct taken from the papers themselves. So I haven't done any calculations, so these are what the authors themselves would have taken. In each of these studies, some polygraph naive individuals were recruited and were programmed. It was programmed innocent, programmed guilty. The programmed guilty would simply, as Dr. Ryan has just described, go out and commit some act that is meant to be similar to an espionage or sabotage or whatever. Then there would be polygraph. That's all I have is for here are the studies, these are the rows, and the columns, this is the, of those who were programmed innocent, what percent were identified as innocent in the polygraph exam, were correctly identified? The INC, this is what percent of those who were programmed innocent got an inconclusive or no decision result. And over here, of those who were programmed to be guilty, so they went out and did this act, what percent were correctly identified as guilty, and what percent were identified as inconclusive? Now, here we have, I'm going to use handwriting from a cell phone with a trimmer, but hopefully you can read these numbers. Okay, so these are all field analog studies. Yes?
So, the question is the remaining percentage incorrect or what?
Right. I didn't put that in there. So, this would be, so to add to 100, I'm just trying to.
That would be 19%, unfortunately.
Right. So of those guilty, the 100 minus 62 plus 19 would be the percent who were, innocent, this would be the percent who were positive. So this is, these correct numbers are so-called sensitivities. Specificities and sensitivities. Okay?
I'm sorry, what are you doing with the inconclusive?
Okay, so if there were 100 people here,
right.
Okay, I think it's the percentage of the numbers. There were 100 people in this study, that's not true, there were 56. There were 26 and they were innocent. Say there are 100. Okay. So of those 100 who didn't do anything, 62 of them, their polygraph exam came out, no problem. This person is non-deceptive. 19 of those 100 had a polygraph exam which was recorded as inconclusive or no decision.
Right. And another 19.
And another 19 were in error. So what you would like, you know, ideally, you'd like this column to be as close to 100 as you could get. That would be perfect accuracy. And you would like this to be as low as you could get. That would mean that you would make the decisions on everybody. And similarly over here, I would like this to be as close to 100 as possible, and I would like this to be as close to 0 as possible. Okay?
You would also like the sum of the two.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. This next set of studies, I didn't manage to misplace my little and put this abroad in blue because I would cheat sheet as it was before. These are the Hans and Barlin studies done in 1989 on the counterintelligence scope polygraph, three different experiments. And then in 1992, Hans independently did that.
Patricia, may I just come in on that second batch for just the content of it? The first one you see performed poorly in terms of off measure for a lot of such cases. And they examined a number of features. That was a case where there was a lag between the commission of the crime, the non-crime, and the testing. and there was some question about wording, so the follow-up studies would have varied those factors. None of those factors turned out to be significant. You see, however, that the number of false negatives does go down. Study 2 is perhaps a nice case of that. False positives also were a problem, though, so it looks like it's a criterion shift. It's responsible. It wasn't just the factors that were manipulated changed. It looked like how they were scoring the record changed. And the third, it looks like there's some adjustment to that criteria. There's no information about exactly how those criteria were applied. It's consistent across the parameters, but it wasn't clear to the criteria that was actually changed. That's the simplest explanation of the change in the result. There was consistent, as in all these cases, there's an emphasis on internal resources. No one has temporal stability. When we talk about how the examiner might be interacting with the examiner, might make a difference. What you'd like to see is if somebody is testing on multiple occasions by different examiners, what's the consistency across sessions or across examiners? That is reliability and intentional consistency.
Do they have different examiners scoring the same exam?
In most of these, they have different examiners, they have blind examiners, scoring different examiners. So, but that's like the QC right now is internal consistency, not temporal stability, non generalizability, and validity is what she's showing you here.
So reliability, as it's measured by the QC program, is reliability given a recording.
So you raise the reliability on a recording.
That's right. So you never repeat the test in exactly the same. It's not clear you could.
But that would be an. That's what you need to know. Right. Do these factors, these non-standardized factors, affect the results?
Right.
Affect the chart. That's
right.
That's something that's not present in any of these studies.
Right. And the only way that quality control addresses that is in things that are taught to the examiners and are part of the process in review that the principle of being standardized.
So
but
no fractional people take two tests?
Well, what does it mean to do the acquaintance test a second time, given that you did it yesterday, for example? Does it mean the same thing?
You could see whether they came up with the same answer.
But one of the implications of doing subsequent charts, they act differently when you do the first chart versus the second chart. If you do a second acquaintance exam, I'm not as clear, but certainly when you do charts because it's sufficient to do additional charts for resolution, it isn't necessary. It means the preparation, the question is the same, but the preparation is the same. Your mental steps are in the same.
Well, no, you could tell people we're doing this just
but they don't believe you the first time, are they
going to
believe you
in that? My point is, if they thought they were identical, there would be no
baggage of drinking. If they know they're participating in a study of polygraph, it would be perfectly natural to say we're going to take a certain proportion of people and have them do polygraphs.
But if yesterday you did four breakouts, you're coming back to replicate that. What does that mean to the person who spent 4.5 hours staffed in his chair yesterday going through the exam? That's very different than the person. I don't know what it means. That's
what it means.
The internal consistency approach that's in QC right now makes sense if and only if you have a procedure you know to be valid, and if you adhere to the test scoring or application, you get valid results. So DNA, as long as you follow the procedures, you should get valid results. Calligraphy, partly what these data show is that it's not as clear that this is a highly accurate, that it's sensitive answer. These numbers do not lead to the conclusion. Now, they're better than chance. So, you know, you suggested earlier that the polygraph test is no better than chance. If you look at it, it's
George. Yeah, I'm the person right behind
you. The actually look at it. They're better than chance, but they're not very sensitive or specific. As you know, false negative rate. at least I know. And discourage.
So why do you care about the liability
I personally think the internal consistency approach is not appropriate at this point under type of office.
But what you're going to keep trying to design the liability, in other words, you're going to be liable test with a test ballot.
So this is a point that looks like what we're talking about. Yes. If you think about this in terms of components of variation, which is how I think Peter and I are describing it, then in fact reducing one component of variation is good as long as you recognize what it does to the other. If you think of it in the aggregate, which is I think what Rich's description is, it can be viewed as a bad thing. But I think I would argue that you always want to think of it in terms of components of variation for this evaluation. And we're going to have to beat each other under the head when we come to closure.
Is my ability to do the polygraph has to do with my unique way of approaching the test. And the way we achieve internal consistency is that we have to train me to do it Peter's way. Then you might actually be reducing my accuracy by requiring me to learn Peter's technique.
Yeah, but
that's an assumption.
But then the bias that's associated with making you look like Peter gets moved into the validity component if you structure this component of variation. So it's not lost if you record all the data and keep track of it, is what I would actually.
One of the things that should also be recognized about this is that this is at the subject level. In the exam, is the person who classified it deceptive or not deceptive? Or when they look, most of these studies also look at the accuracy of specific question accuracy. Did they identify the specific question on which you need to rely? Because at least they find they know which question they actually lied about.
And the statistical analysis is wrong. It should assume independent. And they even acknowledge that. But not strong.
How do you break it down by internal question? We're supposed to get more logically than most of these people.
That's right. We use a totally operative analysis. Few of us know how to do that.
Identification of question doesn't better than chance. That's a lot. Across these steps. Now, again, the comment is there is a concern that the level of motivation is sufficient, as you said that yourself. But for these studies, identification of the question on which they in fact lie was not better than
chance. So that's the bleeding that Andy was doing.
This is a different chart. This is the chart you're not looking at that I'm talking about.
I haven't looked at this chart.
Okay, this chart is an overall thing. In other words, if you were guilty of crime X, were you scored as guilty? If possible, although you did crime X, where you showed the responses was for crime Y. For purposes of this table, that is, such an individual would be correctly labeled guilty. And the other thing about this table is that this is the original, this is, insofar as I can tell, unintended, but if I'm wrong, let me know, this is intended to be the results of the original polygraph examiner. not the result of any follow-on blind erasure, which tended, when presented, tended to be not dramatically different from any event. Okay, so there are other breakdowns you can give.
But in fact, they classify different people as guilty and different people as innocent, even though they have the same rates.
I have a question. I have a very clear difficulty with each little model, which is possible to be above chance of detecting guilt and a half chance of detecting which thing you're guilty of.
Absolutely, because you're one of the guilty people and you just have this generalized anxiety for taking the test, and when it's measured,
it shows
generalized
up
anxiety, and it shows up somewhere on the test.
And it does show more for the question
that
if you're targeting
what?
Maybe there are other cues. Maybe this is not the polygraph, but it's the clinical ability to identify somebody who looks away, who looks nervous, and they have not been looked like that.
I think the second,
that's
it's also, I mean, taking it